University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education, June Examination Session, 2005. English as a Second Language. Paper 3. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your centre number, candidate number, and your name on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the tape back on. Now you're all ready, here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Where will John eat his lunch?
Hi there, John. Are you coming to the canteen for a hot lunch?
No. I've brought some sandwiches with me today. It's stopped raining now, so I'm going to sit outside and eat them and wait for you. Meet me there when you've finished.
Hi there, John. Are you coming to the canteen for a hot lunch?
No. I've brought some sandwiches with me today. It's stopped raining now, so I'm going to sit outside and eat them and wait for you. Meet me there when you've finished.
Question 2. Alicia wants to borrow books from her college library. What is the problem?
Can I borrow these 3 books, please? I need them for my assignment.
I'll need your library card then, please.
Oh dear, I don't have one yet, but here's my college identity card. Will that do?
No. I'm going to have to ask you to fill out your library application form and then...
Can I borrow these 3 books, please? I need them for my assignment.
I'll need your library card then, please.
Oh dear, I don't have one yet, but here's my college identity card. Will that do?
No. I'm going to have to ask you to fill out your library application form and then...
Question 3. Why has Omar missed his train?
Excuse me. I usually catch the 7:07 train, but it hasn't arrived, and it's not showing up on the display board. What's happening?
Well, you see, our new train timetable starts today, and the 7:07 leaves at 7 o'clock now. I'm sorry, you've missed it.
Excuse me. I usually catch the 7:07 train, but it hasn't arrived, and it's not showing up on the display board. What's happening?
Well, you see, our new train timetable starts today, and the 7:07 leaves at 7 o'clock now. I'm sorry, you've missed it.
Question 4. Why is Nikos late meeting his friends?
Nikos, at last! Where have you been? We've been waiting ages for you.
What do you mean? I'm on time. Look, it's only 10:15.
No, it's not. Your watch has stopped. It's nearly 11 o'clock. Nikos, at last! Where have you been? We've been waiting ages for you.
What do you mean? I'm on time. Look, it's only 10:15.
No, it's not. Your watch has stopped. It's nearly 11 o'clock.
Question 5. Mariam wants to open a student bank account. Apart from her passport, which two things must she take with her to do this?
Hello, is that the bank?
Yes, madam. How may we help you?
My name is Mariam Al-Noor, and I would like to open a student account.
Good morning, Ms. Al-Noor. You'll need to come in and see us in person to do that. Please don't forget to bring your passport, birth certificate, and a document which has your address on it to prove where you live.
OK. I'll come in tomorrow at 9:30. Hello, is that the bank?
Yes, madam. How may we help you?
My name is Mariam Al-Noor, and I would like to open a student account.
Good morning, Ms. Al-Noor. You'll need to come in and see us in person to do that. Please don't forget to bring your passport, birth certificate, and a document which has your address on it to prove where you live.
OK. I'll come in tomorrow at 9:30.
Question 6. Bi Ling doesn't know where to go for a music lesson at her new college. Where exactly is the classroom located? Give two details.
Please, could you help me? I'm late for my class. Where's the music room, please?
Oh, it's in a different building. Go out of that door there, and you'll be on the field. Turn right, walk for a bit, and then look for the tallest building in the row opposite you. That's the music block. And the room you need is on the second floor. Enjoy your class.
Thanks very much. Please, could you help me? I'm late for my class. Where's the music room, please?
Oh, it's in a different building. Go out of that door there, and you'll be on the field. Turn right, walk for a bit, and then look for the tallest building in the row opposite you. That's the music block. And the room you need is on the second floor. Enjoy your class.
Thanks very much.
That is the last question in part one. In a moment, you will hear part two. Now look at the questions for part two, exercise one. Part two. Part two, exercise one. Question 7. Listen to the following interview about a sponsored walk, and then fill in the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening. I'm Ken Malone. Welcome to Your Voice Counts, our weekly look at how what you do helps make life better for other people. Tonight, we have the story of two sisters, one of whom, Françoise Joannou, is here to talk to us. Ms. Joannou.
Oh, please, call me Françoise.
Françoise, you and your sister have just returned from an exhausting experience.
Yes, we have spent a month walking the Great Wall of China. It was all to raise money for a charity which supports research into diseases. We hope our little contribution goes towards saving some lives.
Tell us more about your trip. Why did you decide to carry out this expedition?
My sister became very ill. Thankfully, she recovered, and we were all so grateful for her restored health that we decided to do something to raise money to help medical research.
Why did you choose to go to the Great Wall of China?
Actually, it was already arranged. A large fundraising event was to take place there. It was called Walk for Life, and all we had to do was start collecting sponsors.
What do you mean by sponsors?
We asked people and businesses, local shops, schools, libraries and churches, everyone who knew us, in fact, to promise us a little money for each kilometre we walked.
I understand. How far did you walk then?
Well, the Great Wall is 5,000 kilometres long. It's endless. You can see it going on ahead of you over huge mountain ranges. Did you know it can be seen from space? We thought we'd try 100 kilometres, which sounded easy.
Yeah, that sounds a reasonable goal.
Remember that the Great Wall was built over 2,000 years ago as a protection against hostile tribes. It's as strong as a fortress. And because of that, it's often necessary to climb straight up for 1,500 metres. In one place, we had to clamber up 2,000 huge steps. At one point, we had to be pulled across a section above a reservoir on a harness. Quite terrifying.
And did you achieve your aim of 100 kilometres?
Yes, we did. And it's wonderful to know that the money raised will now be put towards research, which will help others to live longer.
Well done. Would you encourage our listeners to take part in another Walk for Life?
Oh, certainly. There are treks planned all over the world. Have a look at this website, www.walkforlife.net.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening. I'm Ken Malone. Welcome to Your Voice Counts, our weekly look at how what you do helps make life better for other people. Tonight, we have the story of two sisters, one of whom, Françoise Joannou, is here to talk to us. Ms. Joannou.
Oh, please. Call me Françoise.
Françoise, you and your sister have just returned from an exhausting experience.
Yes, we have spent a month walking the Great Wall of China. It was all to raise money for a charity which supports research into diseases. We hope our little contribution goes towards saving some lives.
Tell us more about your trip. Why did you decide to carry out this expedition?
My sister became very ill. Thankfully, she recovered. And we were all so grateful for her restored health that we decided to do something to raise money to help medical research.
Why did you choose to go to the Great Wall of China?
Actually, it was already arranged. A large fundraising event was to take place there. It was called Walk for Life, and all we had to do was start collecting sponsors.
What do you mean by sponsors?
We asked people and businesses, local shops, schools, libraries and churches, everyone who knew us, in fact, to promise us a little money for each kilometre we walked.
I understand. How far did you walk then?
Well, the Great Wall is 5,000 kilometres long. It's endless. You can see it going on ahead of you over huge mountain ranges. Did you know it can be seen from space? We thought we'd try 100 kilometres, which sounded easy.
Yeah, that sounds a reasonable goal.
Remember that the Great Wall was built over 2,000 years ago as a protection against hostile tribes. It's as strong as a fortress. And because of that, it's often necessary to climb straight up for 1,500 metres. In one place, we had to clamber up 2,000 huge steps. At one point, we had to be pulled across a section above a reservoir on a harness. Quite terrifying.
And did you achieve your aim of 100 kilometres?
Yes, we did. And it's wonderful to know that the money raised will now be put towards research, which will help others to live longer.
Well done. Would you encourage our listeners to take part in another Walk for Life?
Oh, certainly. There are treks planned all over the world. Have a look at this website, www.walkforlife.net.
That is the end of Part 2, Exercise 1. In a moment you will hear Part 2, Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2. Part 2, Exercise 2. Question 8. Listen to the following interview with the winner of a telephone text messaging poetry competition, and then fill in the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to Writer's World. Text messaging is becoming increasingly popular all around the world. Today, we focus on the annual text message poetry competition, which was started last year by some people in London, England. Tim Karambi won last year's competition and is here in the studio to talk to us. It's nice to meet you, Tim, and thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
To help anyone out there who doesn't know, perhaps you could tell us briefly what text messaging actually is.
Sure. It means sending a message anywhere in the world from a mobile phone. Sometimes it's referred to as texting. We use a special sort of shortened language for this, lots of abbreviations and so on. It's a bit like an email in some ways, but it has loads of advantages over that.
What is the advantage of text messages, in your opinion, then?
Speed. You can communicate instantly with someone, and it needn't make any sound or disturbance. It's an easy way of keeping in touch, perhaps even with people you normally wouldn't have telephoned or written to because of shortage of time or of cash. It's very quick to do and doesn't cost much.
So how did you hear about the competition?
Completely by chance. I just happened to read about it in a newspaper I found left on the train. Competition entries were invited from people to send poems by text message. The poems could use no more than 160 characters.
Characters?
Letters or words or punctuation marks.
160? That's not much for a proper poem, is it?
Well, why not? Some of the best poems can say a lot in very little space. And that is the whole art of text messaging, isn't it? And texting means you can be really brief. For example, instead of writing Y-O-U for the word you, we put just the letter U.
I'm not sure what my old English teacher would have to say about that. So, Tim, did many people enter?
About 7,500, actually. Most of them were from people like me, who'd never tried to write a text poem before. They composed their poems on the train, in traffic jams, on boats, on buses, anywhere, in fact. A short list of favourite entries was drawn up, and these poems were texted to each entrant. We all awarded each poem marks out of 10, so the final judges were the text poets themselves.
It sounds great fun. And the second competition is just being started, isn't it?
Yes, and there are really good cash prizes for winners. Plus the chance to see your entry displayed on posters on 7,000 London buses and in the underground stations.
So how do we enter?
Just text your poem to 8880111. Oh, and you can find more information about the competition and can read last year's winning entries for inspiration on the internet at www.textpoetry.com. It's great fun, and you've got nothing to lose. Good luck.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to Writer's World. Text messaging is becoming increasingly popular all around the world. Today, we focus on the annual text message poetry competition, which was started last year by some people in London, England. Tim Karambi won last year's competition and is here in the studio to talk to us. It's nice to meet you, Tim, and thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
To help anyone out there who doesn't know, perhaps you could tell us briefly what text messaging actually is.
Sure. It means sending a message anywhere in the world from a mobile phone. Sometimes it's referred to as texting. We use a special sort of shortened language for this, lots of abbreviations and so on. It's a bit like an email in some ways, but it has loads of advantages over that.
What is the advantage of text messages, in your opinion, then?
Speed. You can communicate instantly with someone, and it needn't make any sound or disturbance. It's an easy way of keeping in touch, perhaps even with people you normally wouldn't have telephoned or written to because of shortage of time or of cash. It's very quick to do and doesn't cost much.
So how did you hear about the competition?
Completely by chance. I just happened to read about it in a newspaper I found left on the train. Competition entries were invited from people to send poems by text message. The poems could use no more than 160 characters.
Characters?
Letters or words or punctuation marks.
160? That's not much for a proper poem, is it?
Well, why not? Some of the best poems can say a lot in very little space. And that is the whole art of text messaging, isn't it? And texting means you can be really brief. For example, instead of writing Y-O-U for the word you, we put just the letter U.
I'm not sure what my old English teacher would have to say about that. So, Tim, did many people enter?
About 7,500, actually. Most of them were from people like me, who'd never tried to write a text poem before. They composed their poems on the train, in traffic jams, on boats, on buses, anywhere, in fact. A short list of favourite entries was drawn up, and these poems were texted to each entrant. We all awarded each poem marks out of 10, so the final judges were the text poets themselves.
It sounds great fun. And the second competition is just being started, isn't it?
Yes, and there are really good cash prizes for winners. Plus, the chance to see your entry displayed on posters on 7,000 London buses and in the underground stations.
So, how do we enter?
Just text your poem to 880-1111. Oh, and you can find more information about the competition and can read last year's winning entries for inspiration on the internet at www.textpoetry.com. It's great fun, and you've got nothing to lose. Good luck.
That is the end of part two. In a moment, you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3. Part 3, Exercise 1. Question 9. Listen to the following interview about ice cream, and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Do you enjoy eating ice cream? Antonio Ponti from Italy is here today to tell us all about the history of one of the world's favourite treats. Hello, Antonio. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Tell us, how was ice cream invented?
Well, there are lots of theories. Being an Italian, I like to think it was invented in Italy. One theory is that the Grand Duke of Toledo was probably the first person to create and eat ice cream, something like the sort we eat now. He had an ice house built in the grounds of his Italian estate in 1576. This was meant to keep his drink cool with snow, you see. That was the only way in which they kept drinks cool in the 16th century in places like that.
I see. How does this link with ice cream as we know it today?
The Grand Duke invented a mixture of boiling grape juice, which he poured over iced milk from his ice house, and drank in the middle of the night to get rid of his indigestion.
Really?
Yes. It's written about in historical documents. He then tried mixing frozen milk and egg yolk, and there was the first ice cream.
Ice cream couldn't have been invented without snow, then. I always think of sun when I think of Italy. Strange it got invented there.
Well, Italy luckily has plenty of snow as well as sun. Ideal conditions for making and enjoying ice cream, of course. So the Italians experimented with different ingredients, such as lemon and orange peel, and the spices coriander and cinnamon.
I have to admit, I'd always thought ice cream was an English invention.
Oh, nonsense. But it's true that you British have liked it for almost as long as us. There's evidence that in England, ice cream was served to the king in the year 1671. Ice cream was a really fashionable food in 17th century England, you see, only fit for royalty and the very rich. Then, in 1856, an Englishman called William Fuller invented an ice cream-making tub and published a book of ice cream recipes. And in the 20th century, refrigerators made it possible for ordinary households in England to make and store ice cream for themselves.
So, that's some of its history. Can ice cream evolve any more, do you think?
Well, there's a trend for unexpected flavours, like, oh, cheese and onion ice cream, tomato and egg ice cream, or tuna fish ice cream.
Ooh.
I've even heard of an American burger ice cream.
Oh, yuck. That sounds really dreadful. I'll stick with my favourite vanilla and fruit flavours, I think.
Yes, you can't go wrong with those traditional flavours. Vanilla has been the world's favourite flavour since 1850. I also like chocolate, but my personal favourite has to be a delicious ice cream flavoured with a spice called sumac that I ate in both Kuwait and Egypt last year. The best I had ever tasted.
Oh, I'm going to Cairo next month, so I'll have to see if I can find some. Is ice cream good for us, do you think?
Yes, nutritionally, it's wonderful for the elderly and young children because of its vitamins and fat content, but in moderation, of course.
I really like blueberries. What should I do to make a blueberry ice cream?
Easy. Why not try with just blueberry jam and cream to start with? Just pour it all into a shallow dish, freeze it, turn it out and whip it up, and then refreeze. Delicious.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Do you enjoy eating ice cream? Antonio Ponti from Italy is here today to tell us all about the history of one of the world's favourite treats. Hello, Antonio. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Tell us, how was ice cream invented?
Well, there are lots of theories. Being an Italian, I like to think it was invented in Italy. One theory is that the Grand Duke of Toledo was probably the first person to create and eat ice cream, something like the sort we eat now. He had an ice house built in the grounds of his Italian estate in 1576. This was meant to keep his drink cool with snow, you see. That was the only way in which they kept drinks cool in the 16th century in places like that.
I see. How does this link with ice cream as we know it today?
The Grand Duke invented a mixture of boiling grape juice, which he poured over iced milk from his ice house, and drank in the middle of the night to get rid of his indigestion.
Really?
Yes. It's written about in historical documents. He then tried mixing frozen milk and egg yolk, and there was the first ice cream.
ice cream couldn't have been invented without snow then. I always think of sun when I think of Italy. Strange it got invented there.
Well, Italy luckily has plenty of snow as well as sun. Ideal conditions for making and enjoying ice cream, of course. So the Italians experimented with different ingredients, such as lemon and orange peel, and the spices coriander and cinnamon.
I have to admit, I'd always thought ice cream was an English invention.
Oh, nonsense. But it's true that you British have liked it for almost as long as us. There's evidence that in England, ice cream was served to the king in the year 1671. Ice cream was a really fashionable food in 17th century England, you see, only fit for royalty and the very rich. Then, in 1856, an Englishman called William Fuller invented an ice cream making tub and published a book of ice cream recipes. And in the 20th century, refrigerators made it possible for ordinary households in England to make and store ice cream for themselves.
So, that's some of its history. Can ice cream evolve any more, do you think?
Well, there's a trend for unexpected flavours, like, oh, cheese and onion ice cream, tomato and egg ice cream, or tuna fish ice cream.
Ooh.
I've even heard of an American burger ice cream.
Oh, yuck. That sounds really dreadful. I'll stick with my favourite vanilla and fruit flavours, I think.
Yes, you can't go wrong with those traditional flavours. Vanilla has been the world's favourite flavour since 1850. I also like chocolate, but my personal favourite has to be a delicious ice cream flavoured with a spice called sumac that I ate in both Kuwait and Egypt last year. The best I had ever tasted.
Oh, I'm going to Cairo next month, so I'll have to see if I can find some. Is ice cream good for us, do you think?
Yes, nutritionally, it's wonderful for the elderly and young children because of its vitamins and fat content, but in moderation, of course.
I really like blueberries. What should I do to make a blueberry ice cream?
Easy. Why not try with just blueberry jam and cream to start with? Just pour it all into a shallow dish, freeze it, turn it out and whip it up, and then refreeze. Delicious.
That is the end of Part 3, Exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2. Part 3, Exercise 2. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about healing waters, called spas, in Hungary, and then indicate whether each statement is true or false by putting a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice.
Do you ever feel that your day has been very long? Do you fill your days with activities and very little sleep? Our fast lifestyle in the 21st century means that often we're completely worn out by the pace of our lives. One way to combat this is to take time for yourself and to sample the waters in a spa town. I decided to travel to Budapest in Hungary, named Spa City of the World in 1934. Hungary's philosophy has always been health by water. The city of Budapest is built above many winding channels of healing spa waters and natural hot springs. This water flows underneath the city at a warm temperature of 30 degrees Celsius. Indeed, the ancient name for Budapest in Hungarian meant abundant waters. Hungary itself has over 1,000 hot springs, and at least a dozen of these are in the city of Budapest.
Thousands of years ago, the bubbling Hungarian waters were known to increase energy by Celts, Romans and Turks. Ever since then, these salty, steaming pools have been world famous for their medicinal and restorative properties. Modern-day Hungarians will testify how, by drinking spring water or by bathing in thermal baths, their aches and pains are banished and their vitality is restored. The actual bathhouses above the springs are beautiful too. The Turks began this tradition here about 400 years ago. High-domed glass ceilings let lots of natural light into the baths, which are still in use, and as popular today as when they were originally built. The two largest thermal pools are a popular meeting place, where people can play games, such as floating chess, at the weekend. They are visited by 2.3 million people each year. Most thermal baths have indoor and outdoor pools, steam sections and mineral areas where visitors can immerse themselves in rich volcanic mud. It sounds terrible, but it makes your skin soft. You leave the thermal spa feeling invigorated and brighter. Try it for yourself, or take a drink of the salty spring water and feel its health-giving effects.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Do you ever feel that your day has been very long? Do you fill your days with activities and very little sleep? Our fast lifestyle in the 21st century means that often we're completely worn out by the pace of our lives. One way to combat this is to take time for yourself and to sample the waters in a spa town. I decided to travel to Budapest in Hungary, named Spa City of the World in 1934. Hungary's philosophy has always been health by water. The city of Budapest is built above many winding channels of healing spa waters and natural hot springs. This water flows underneath the city at a warm temperature of 30 degrees Celsius. Indeed, the ancient name for Budapest in Hungarian meant abundant waters. Hungary itself has over 1,000 hot springs, and at least a dozen of these are in the city of Budapest. Thousands of years ago, the bubbling Hungarian waters were known to increase energy by Celts, Romans and Turks. Ever since then, these salty, steaming pools have been world famous for their medicinal and restorative properties. Modern-day Hungarians will testify how, by drinking spring water or by bathing in thermal baths, their aches and pains are banished and their vitality is restored. The actual bathhouses above the springs are beautiful too. The Turks began this tradition here about 400 years ago. High-domed glass ceilings let lots of natural light into the baths, which are still in use and as popular today as when they were originally built. The two largest thermal pools are a popular meeting place where people can play games such as floating chess at the weekend. They are visited by 2.3 million people each year. Most thermal baths have indoor and outdoor pools, steam sections and mineral areas where visitors can immerse themselves in rich volcanic mud. It sounds terrible, but it makes your skin soft. You leave the thermal spa feeling invigorated and brighter. Try it for yourself, or take a drink of the salty spring water and feel its health-giving effects.
That is the end of part three and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your center number, candidate number, and your name on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected.